Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and a Nobel for President Trump. Nobel Peace Prize, 312-642-5600, Turnkey Debt Pro Answer Line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. It had been telegraphed. People were talking about it prior to the summit, and now a nomination has been put forward.
Two Norwegian lawmakers, two of my people, they cast their votes for Trump, and they told their local media that, quote, Trump has taken a huge and important step in the direction of the disarmament, peace, and reconciliation between North and South Korea. Currently, there are 330 candidates for the Nobel Peace Prize. Just in case you're keeping count, and odds makers in Vegas are deciding what's going
to
happen.
Aren't we getting to the point where the Nobel Peace Prize is like a participation trophy? Everybody nominated gets one.
Oh no, because
we're
not
about
everybody, yeah, but not everybody that gets nominated wins. So, out of 216, 114 are organizations. So he's not competing against people; he's competing against some groups that have done great works to promote peace throughout the world. Thank you and goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think he deserves it?
No.
I mean,
first of all, he shouldn't be interested in it, number one, because the designation has been stripped of so much value. Again, when you're conferring the Nobel Peace Prize on President Obama for potential on the likes of Yasser Arafat, I don't think so. Number one. Number two, nothing's been accomplished other than a meeting. That's not an accomplishment. Travel is not an accomplishment. Meetings aren't an accomplishment. It could be progress. It's a step. Even the president has said a framework for denuclearization. We'll see what happens. I could come back in 6 months from now and say, you know what, I was wrong. I misjudged Kim Jong-un and his level of seriousness about denuclearization. All these, like, you know, rushing to confer honorifics on politicians. No, not even close. Is anybody any disagreement there? Is there anybody? I mean, honestly, is it? What's the disagreement?
Well, the thing is that he had a face-to-face meeting. And
that's
what's different than, well, I know.
Different.
Bill Clinton did what 26
years
ago.
Well, he didn't. You know, it was through the Secretary of State. It was through Gallucci. It wasn't Clinton. But that's not the point. Different and.
I think this one's going to be, I mean, this could be catastrophic, or this could be the most brilliant stroke of genius in the world, what Trump did by meeting Kim Jong-un.
Well, the meeting is not going to be catastrophic. It's already happened. It's not catastrophic.
Right. But now you have Mike Pompeo. He was in South Korea this morning. He's in China, and he's ironing out agreements, saying there will be no easing up on sanctions until we see proof of denuclearization.
Specific performance, right.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it goes. That's the point. Is this a? It's a new angle into North Korea to deal with a problem that has bedeviled the United States for at least three generations now. Certainly, the last three generations of this family. So let's see. The rush to organize the ticker tape parades. Chill out. Just relax. When it comes to politicians. When it comes to politicians, substantive outcomes. Although it's interesting that this debate is happening. Another debate that's happening is about that video that he showed Kim Jong-un.
Oh, in a world gone mad.
Yeah.
One Destiny Productions present.
Is that the new name of the Weinstein company, Destiny Pictures?
Two men, one choice or something.
Kind of the peace in our time. It could be fun. You could have.
The question is
international hotels. You can have
water parks,
trains. You could have the slides.
Yeah, water slides, and then they showed boating, water sports, and then I saw somebody on water skis. Yeah. I mean, it's really going to be
could have like
a juggernaut of
intramural kayaking.
Right. It's going to be a vacation hotspot.
Mm-hmm. And the Trump Whisperer has weighed in on this, Scott Adams, Dilbert cartoon creator, who had Trump sussed out very early on in his candidacy and suggests that, again, if you haven't familiarized yourself with Scott Adams and what he has said, his kind of long-running commentary on Trump, including on this show, he thinks Trump is a master communicator. Scott Adams, who is a licensed hypnotherapist.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Scott Adams said this about that video.
Let me give you my first reaction. I just watched it. It's fresh in my mind. It might be the best thing that anybody ever did in a negotiation. Period. It might be, in the history of the world, the best thing anybody ever did. It is so good. It hits every note perfectly.
I'll tell you what, Scott Adams, not only the Trump Whisperer, he's starting to sound like Trump. The best thing anybody's ever done in a negotiation in the history of the world.
But you have to think of your audience. So President Trump knows that Kim Jong-un likes Dennis Rodman, likes basketball, loves the Bulls, loves things that are American. So he puts this propaganda video together. Well, hypothetically what North Korea could look like if they just cooperate with us. And it's beautiful. I mean, listen how effective it is. I get the chills.
A story about a special moment in time when a man is presented with one chance that may never be repeated. What will he choose? To show vision and leadership? Or not?
Yeah, not the most creative, compelling prose I've ever heard.
But it feeds to his audience.
I don't think Trump is going to Harold Hill his way to denuclearize North Korea. I don't think so. However, there was an approach he could have taken.
What
I would have done if I was going to show him a video, do the other way. It's the incentive to not find yourself in the same place as your father.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of, when they went back and reviewed his father's leadership years, it was in black and white, and they showed some bombs going off.
And that's not what I'm talking
people
about.
That looked oppressed.
No. Well, he doesn't care. They don't care about... Oh, yeah, he's worried about oppressing people. That's Kim Jong-un. No, he's worried about his power.
Yeah.
And he's worried about being celebrated. He's worried maybe about having friends. And remember, at the end, his dad was very lonely.
Why aren't more people encouraging, like me? I'm so lonely, so lonely, so lonely and sad, real alone. There's no one, just me only, sitting on my rental throne.
See, you don't want to end up like that.
I work very hard and make up great plans, but nobody listens, no one.
Can't you see the tear running down Kim Jong-un's face as he watches this? Remembering dear old dad. You don't want to be that guy.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy and Donald Trump also sat down with Brett Baer. Another one-on-one interview on Air Force One. And
notice how everyone had the exclusive, but everybody sat down and talked to him.
That's how they do it in the news business.
Yeah.
I said, whatever you get is the exclusive, because there's only one you. There's only one Clinton Foundation donor zero. There's only one Brett Baer. Here's the thing. Trump was apparently up for 26 hours straight, so... I'm going to give him a little latitude on language, since that's not really his strong suit to begin with. But
and after, I mean, 26 hours straight, that's a long time.
Here's what he had to say about the relationship between him and Un and what he believes the level of commitment is to the principles laid out in the document they jointly signed.
This should have been done 10 years, 15, 20 years ago. This shouldn't be done now where they have an arsenal of nuclear weapons. This should have never allowed to get to this point. With that being said, Chairman Kim wants to resolve the problem because he knew that we weren't playing around. I wasn't playing around. He's not playing around. We have a very, I really say, for a fairly short-term relationship, because it was unbelievably hostile, the rhetoric. Rhetorically, it was unbelievably hostile. And I think we have a very good relationship. We understand each other.
Neither is playing around, and they get each other.
All right. Okay. Also, when asked by Brett Baer about Korean War soldiers, that their parents begged him to bring their son's remains home, unless if you do the math, it's not possible. But here's Trump.
You know, you call people sometimes killers. He is a killer. I mean, he's clearly executing people.
He's a tough guy. Hey, when you take over a country, tough country, with tough people, and you take it over from your father, I don't care who you are, what you are, how much of an advantage you have. If you can do that at 27 years old, that's 1 in 10,000 that could do that. So he's a very smart guy. He's a great negotiator. But I think we understand each other.
Yeah.
But he's still done some really bad things.
Yeah, but so have a lot of other people done some really bad things. I mean, I could go through a lot of nations where a lot of bad things were done. Now,
right. That was the portion of the interview that's particularly troubling. It's just unnecessary. I know he's inartful with language sometimes, but you don't have to be artful with language to ratchet down some of the compliments.
Flattery got him places in business, and I think he's translating that into diplomatic relations.
He's a dictator. He's a communist thug. He's not some super talented guy. 1 in 10,000. He didn't take over like his dad's languishing auto parts company and turn it into a Fortune 500 company. He's a scion of a dictator who continued the family business of being a murderous dictator who subjugates his people. There's nothing to be celebrated in that. There's little talent associated with that. I mean, other than if you would argue he's been able to keep a coup d'etat from happening, but he had a couple of generations a head start on that in terms of oppressing his people. That whole a talented guy, he's a bold leader, he's a tough guy. Thugs aren't tough guys, they're cowards. And he's the opposite of a tough
and
guy.
And quickly, here's the part about the remains.
The things that really I'm happy is that the soldiers that died in Korea, their remains are going to be coming back home. And we have thousands of people that have asked for that. Thousands and thousands of people.
So that's one, if you want to look to try to see an immediate accomplishment, we'll see if those remains are returned.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Hey, Joe Walsh here. The Justice Department IG report is out, but why should we believe the IG report if we can't believe the Mueller report? We'll talk about it when Freedom returns at 5.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. That FBI Inspector General report, the Horowitz report on, ostensibly on Comey and Hillary Clinton, the handling of the Hillary email investigation is out, going to be out today. President Trump is going to get an advance briefing.
Ooh, do you think he'll tweet about it then?
So
we can get an advance briefing too?
I don't know. I assume he'll wait for Horowitz's office to issue their report. The suggestion has been made this week by a number of congressmen, including New York's Peter King, that it's going to be rather devastating. He suggests that it will show improprieties by Comey, McCabe, plus the two lovebirds.
Oh,
that would be Strzok and Page. Yeah.
How are they doing?
Don't know. And Loretta Lynch also perhaps factors into this report. So this will be interesting to see. In addition to that, or sort of in the context of this release, you've had this curious week of reports, including from a woman I regard as the best pure journalist inside the Beltway, Catherine Herridge, Fox News.
I love her.
She reported that Rosenstein, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, had threatened to subpoena emails, phone records, and other documents from lawmakers and staff on the House Intel Committee during a tense meeting earlier this year. This email is reviewed by Fox News documenting the encounter, reflecting what aides described as a personal attack, reports Herridge. going so far as to say that if this committee likes being litigators, this is, again, with respect to this long-running effort to get documents that Congress is entitled to, consistent with our oversight responsibilities. Going as far to say, if this committee likes being litigators, then we at DOJ, too, are litigators. We will subpoena your records and emails, referring to the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, as well as Congress overall. One aide also told Herridge that the Deputy Attorney General launched a sustained personal attack against a congressional staffer in retaliation for vigorous oversight, describing it as astonishing and disheartening, having the nation's number one for these matters law enforcement officer threatened to subpoena your calls and emails was downright chilling. Now, there's some dispute of this characterization, though. The FBI issued a statement saying all Rosenstein did was to say, if you pursue a contempt charge with me, remember he was threatened with a contempt charge, that he has the right to defend himself and will do so vigorously. Also, interestingly, Jeff Sessions yesterday, Attorney General Sessions, sort of rallied to the defense of Rosenstein and the FBI's characterization that no such threats were made, that characterizing them as threats is more aggressive than is warranted.
In fact, the FBI director, the senior ethics attorney for the Department of Justice who was in the room, say that's a mischaracterization, really, of what occurred. And it also, I think, indicates that there's been a breakdown of relationships when, in fact, since January, a great deal of progress has been made. We understand in this department that we are accountable to the president. We are accountable to Congress. And we need to be cooperative with them to produce as many documents as rationally and legally and properly as can be produced, to produce them. And we've made tremendous progress in that regard, really.
Yeah, well, with all due respect, General Sessions, not enough. You know, Paul Ryan has had to inveigh on this, get himself involved and inveigh on this. Devin Nunes and other members of Congress continue to beat the drum on this. Even those who are inclined to be deferential to the FBI and to Department of Justice, like Trey Gowdy. So Sessions is sort of defending his agency. I understand that, but I think I am more persuaded by Catherine Herridge's reporting with the multiple sources backing up the characterization that she reported. So this speaks to larger problems than past employees, senior level officials at FBI, which will be ostensibly covered in the IG report today. We still have this problem at present at the Department of Justice. We have this problem at present at the Department of Justice when it comes to their oversight responsibilities, Rod Rosenstein's oversight responsibilities with respect to Bob Mueller. Oh, and by the way, Bob Mueller and this career prosecutor, consummate professional, integrity beyond reproach, how he was billed coming in and how he is still billed by many, said some lapses in competency, it seems, this week. Have you seen these stories?
Which ones?
Here's one example. He sort of got pantsed by those Russians he indicted because they actually had representation show up in court.
Oh, really?
He may have been using the indictment of some Russian firms and 13 Russian nationals for meddling in the election as a PR stunt.
But they didn't take it that way.
Well,
they're defending themselves.
Interestingly, right, because what they see is an opportunity for discovery.
Oh,
you want to indict him? Okay, well, fine. Let's move to the discovery phase of the process. Oh, whoa.
Whoa.
You don't want to get involved in that because you don't want state secrets falling in the hands of foreign intelligence services and erstwhile enemies of the state. Powerline blog noting that Mueller probably didn't see that coming. Perhaps the indictment, as I said, was more of a PR stunt to bolster the Russian collusion, interference, meddling narrative than it was to actually prosecute the case. you know, you never figure you're going to actually get these guys in court and bring them to justice. So let's at least make the statement of principle. Well, now they're sort of jujitsuing this indictment, or at least attempting to, and putting Mueller's team back on the heels, their heels. In addition to that, in the Manafort case, Mueller and his team appears to have accidentally outed journalists who produced messages to the FBI about Manafort's alleged coaching up on lobbying practices. A special counsel accidentally exposed names of former journalists and European politicians allegedly involved in Manafort's secret Ukraine lobbying. They just filed a new version of the indictment with redactions, as so reported by Washington Post reporter Rachel Weiner. In addition to sort of their judgment calls, the actual execution of the cases they have brought is not inspiring a lot of confidence. So, this is getting interesting in terms of the continued devolution of the standing in the public's mind of FBI, of DOJ, and of Mueller. And the evidence is continuing to mount to support that credibility crisis for those institutions, and including the special counsel and his team. Ken in Lombard, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, Dan, I wanted to make a comment about this Peter Strzok, who was put in charge of HR for the FBI. When you're in HR, you're in charge of the hiring of new employees and the transfer of employees from other organizations within the government. I'll give you an example. Let's say somebody worked in the civilian end for the Department of the Navy and the Judge Advocate General. They can be floated over as a GS employee to the DOJ or FBI. He is in charge of profiling people and see who's going to fit the organization. That is not a harmless position. What he's doing is setting the template for decades to come. That he needs to be purged. The FBI needs a molecular rearrangement, not just shuffling people around like marked cards in a deck. That's not the way you get things done.
Yeah, I agree with that. Thanks for the call, Ken. And one other thing from this prosecution of James Wolfe, the Senate Intel staffer who leaked classified information to his girlfriend, New York Times reporter.
Oh, gosh.
Andy McCabe, let's go back to him, the deputy director. We mentioned this earlier this week. Jonathan Turley had a good piece on it in The Hill, George Washington law professor. Well, wait a second. What's the standard with respect to the rule of law here? If McCabe admitted to Congress he leaked information, he said he had authorization from Comey to do so. Comey says no such thing. But the bottom line is, if McCabe copped to leaking classified information to the media, and right now you've got that James Wolfe character under indictment for leaking information to the media, why should James Wolfe be under indictment and Andy McCabe not be under indictment for the same act? And remember, this isn't just me saying it or Jonathan Turley saying it. In the previous Inspector General report that torched McCabe on the merits, you had Horowitz refer McCabe for consideration of criminal prosecution. He made a criminal referral. What's Jeff Sessions and Rod Rosenstein's Department of Justice going to do about that? Waiting with bated breath.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. President Trump discussing the relationship with Kim Jong-un, the progress that was made at the summit, that they have a framework for denuclearization. Yesterday, we talked about his sit-down with Clinton Foundation donor Zero. Today, per an interview he did on Air Force One yesterday with Brett Baer, he built upon that by talking more specifically about his confidence that he's serious, of course, but that his confidence that Kim Jong-un is serious about denuclearization.
This should have been done 10 years, 15, 20 years ago. This shouldn't be done now where they have an arsenal of nuclear weapons. This should have never allowed to get to this point. With that being said, Chairman Kim wants to resolve the problem because he knew that we weren't playing around. I wasn't playing around. He's not playing around. We have a very, I really say, for a fairly short-term relationship, because it was unbelievably hostile, the rhetoric. Rhetorically, it was unbelievably hostile. And I think we have a very good relationship. We understand each other.
Is his confidence misplaced? Or does he have a third-eye insight into one Kim Jong-un? For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Michael Rubin, resident scholar for the American Enterprise Institute, author of a number of books, including Dancing with the Devil and Kurdistan Rising, former Pentagon official. Michael, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dan. Thanks for having me, Amy.
Our pleasure. And so what do you take what's your take, I should say, in response to Trump's confidence in Kim Jong-un?
You know, call me dubious. And the reason I'm dubious is if we look back over the history of negotiations with North Korea, we have a pattern where it becomes very easy to come to declarative statements that we want denuclearization. The problem is what that means. And when we start negotiating into the details, that's when it all falls apart. Donald Trump isn't orthodox. He thinks outside the box, and that can be a good thing. But in effect, what he's done with the summit is do things in reverse, where he gives the big high-profile meeting first and then figures, well, we can just deal with all the details later. In the past, when we've tried to get to all the details, again, things just haven't worked out the way we thought.
Well, Mike Pompeo, was in South Korea. Now he's in China this morning. But he, you know, said yesterday verification is going to be required and that there has to be denuclearization before those sanctions are lifted. Do you trust in that process?
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of Mike Pompeo. And the thing which Donald Trump is doing differently is that he's not giving a bunch of incentives up front, at least financial incentives up front. And that's a very positive thing, because oftentimes North Korea, and this is a common issue with rogue regimes in general, are much more interested in the process because they can get a lot of money during the process, rather than coming to the ultimate conclusion to make that decision for peace. So as far as that goes, that's important. But also remember, this isn't the first time that North Korea has supposedly promised denuclearization. Under the George H.W. Bush administration, Brent Scowcroft negotiated a denuclearization deal on the Korean Peninsula. Kim's grandfather signed off on that, and it ended up going nowhere.
Right. I mean, we've been on this merry-go-round before, there's no question, or been on this merry-go-round for the past 35 years. The two areas where Trump has received some criticism from the left and the right, get your take on. One is some of his arguably overly complimentary rhetoric in the direction of Kim Jong-un, who's a dictator and a thug. And number two, announcing the suspension of war games, whether it did or did not catch the Pentagon off guard, the substance of suspending those war games, offering a concession where all they have from Kim Jong-un is a statement of principle. What do you say to those criticisms?
You know, I join in both of those criticisms. One of the more interesting things about the summit was the slick 4-minute Hollywood produced video, mm-hmm. Which Donald Trump presented to Kim, which basically gave a vision of what North Korea would be like if North Korea makes the decision to join the rest of the world. And it basically showed North Korea transforming from what it is now into sort of like a Miami Beach. And in fact, I think they used the skyline of Miami Beach in the video. Now, the point of this is there's a reason why Miami Beach developed the way it did, whereas Cuba and Nicaragua didn't. Yeah. And it's because of freedom. It's because of liberty. We've tried, and this is what I don't think Trump mentioned, is we've tried to sort of build up the tourist industry in the past. When I say we, I mean South Korea. In 1998, I believe it was, they created a tourist zone, and a million South Koreans flocked to this tourist zone at a mountain about 30 miles north of the DMZ, And that all came screeching to a halt when a South Korean woman strayed off a walking path and was shot dead by a North Korean soldier. The point of this is, if you're not going to address basic issues of human rights and freedom, you're not going to be able to develop North Korea the way Donald Trump outlined in his vision.
Why hasn't President Trump been, you know, stronger about denouncing, you know, the oppression of the people under the Kim Jong-un regime?
Well, I think for Donald Trump, it's just philosophical in this case that he sees it as an impediment to other issues, and he sees it as an infringement on the sovereignty of North Korea. He wants to reinforce this notion that we are not going to infringe on the sovereignty of North Korea. I mean, there's a logic there. It happens to be a logic with which I disagree.
Yeah, and I mean, part of it is, even if you can see the logic of it, because he has obviously spoken in no uncertain terms about North Korea previously, thinking about Otto Warmbier's murder and release, and then, of course, his death shortly thereafter. And so Rocket Man, he's ridiculed the Kim Jong-un and the regime. So it's not like it's all been namby-pamby rhetoric from Trump, but during this phase of the relationship, it just seems to me, even if you want to tamp down some of the heated rhetoric for the purposes of advancing the larger goal of denuclearization, okay, fine. But he's just taking it a little too far for my taste when he talks about Kim Jong-un being a tough guy, you know, only 1 in 10,000 people could do what Kim Jong-un's done in North Korea. I don't know. There's a lot of people who would be thugs if they were given totalitarian power from their father. It doesn't seem like a big accomplishment to me. I just think it's been a little bit too much, even if you concede the point that you should round off the edges with some of the rhetoric.
No, I absolutely agree. And while it's cheap to bring up World War II, Nazi rhetoric, and so forth, human rights organizations regularly say that the concentration camps which exist in North Korea are actually worse than what existed in Germany during World War II. They exist for different purposes, but the end results are the same. And it's just a level of repression that I don't think many, many Americans can even envision. And when you look at the North Korean philosophy with regard to this, if you are deemed politically disloyal, and that could be a result of, for example, not crying sufficiently when the late leader is mentioned, not only are you condemned, but 3 generations of your family are condemned. It's hard to imagine a regime that upholds those values somehow joining and interacting with the rest of the world.
Do you think the people of North Korea even know what's going on? I mean, do they have access to the information that President Trump has met with Kim Jong-un?
Well, for a while, it was actually interesting because while there was vague mention that there was going to be a meeting, it was only a day before the meeting occurred that the North Korean media mentioned that, yes, there would be a meeting, it would be in Singapore, and so forth. But, you know, in North Korea, there's really 2 North Koreas. There's Pyongyang, which is the capital, which only the elite and screened loyalists can live in. And then there's the rest of the countryside. And I don't think that the rest of the countryside is really aware of what's going on here. But that's another issue. If North Korea is serious about peace, after generations of propaganda demonizing the United States, they've got to start preparing their public. And that's actually the sign that I'd be looking for. And the fact that I don't see it, Amy, is what worries me deeply.
How do you think Beijing and Moscow are receiving the summit and Trump's characterizations of it subsequent to it?
You know, Beijing looks, let me put it this way. North Korea is to Beijing what Hezbollah is to Iran. And therefore, Beijing feels that no matter what happens, they're going to be in the driver's seat. They're going to be able to benefit. From Beijing's standpoint, a legitimization of North Korea would probably be a good thing. At the same time, what Communist China is most obsessed with is Japan. And when we talk about South Korea embracing this sort of process and so forth, the only regional country which has been urging caution is Japan. So really, the U.S. ally Japan is the outlier here. With regard to Russia, you know, I'm going to put that on hold because while Russia does share a tiny border with North Korea, China is really the elephant in the room here.
And what about Syria? I mean, President Assad met with Kim Jong-un 2 weeks ago.
Well, that really just kind of shows where Syria is. For all the talk about Bashar al-Assad being a Western-educated doctor, perhaps he can bring stability. He's an anti-Islamist and so forth. Sometimes a rogue is just a rogue. And this is what we see repeatedly, that we can always pretend with diplomacy that rogue leaders can somehow change, but ultimately the only time you get a regime actually changing is when that rogue leader steps down.
How do you react to the Nobel talk, you know, for Rodman, of course, but also for President Trump?
You know, I tend to find it ridiculous, but this isn't a thing against Donald Trump. My problem with the Nobel Peace Prize is the Nobel Peace Prize is awarded differently than all the other Nobels. All the other Nobels are awarded from Sweden and usually from a panel of experts. The Nobel Peace Prize is awarded in Norway, and it's from a panel of politicians. While all the other Nobel Prizes look at a life's work, a life's record of work, the Nobel Peace Prize tends to be aspirational. Just look at the award for Barack Obama.
Right.
No one actually wants to see 30 years later whether that peace worked. They're voting on hope, and too often that hope goes unrealized. I kind of think, as with many politicians and things that politicians touch, the Nobel Peace Prize Committee is a bit ridiculous.
I think I understand also Barack Obama is under consideration for another Nobel for his forthcoming Netflix shows. So,
I mean, maybe for literature, maybe like for poetry, who knows?
Could be a two-time winner.
PR stunt.
Could be a two-time winner. Speaking of the Obama administration, Ben Rhodes' new book, boy, it's interesting, kind of outing some of the behind the scenes of Obama foreign policy decision making, most notably recently this week, the red line. And how that red line and defending the red line or not defending the red line in Syria that Obama rhetorically drew, how that went down. And it was interesting because Rhodes essentially characterized the President Obama, as looking for a way to not defend the red line. And so the way that he found was to go seek congressional authorization to do so, knowing he wouldn't get it, so he didn't have to do anything about the marker that he put down.
You know, it's kind of interesting because there's a pattern here. When it came, for example, to withdrawing the U.S. forces from Iraq, the big issue that you may remember was we wanted the Iraqi parliament to grant our troops immunity when when Iraqi Prime Minister Maliki refused to send this to the parliament, we walked away. Now, what's oftentimes not told in that story is before we raised our demand that immunity be voted upon by the Iraqi parliament, as an executive authority, Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki had agreed to allow U.S. troops to stay, and then we came back and added this extra condition. Maliki had complained to me shortly after the time in a meeting I had with him that the United States won't take yes for an answer. And so we see this continued pattern where we keep doing things that we know are going to end in rejection and then use that as an excuse, A, to not do them, and B, to have an excuse to sort of divert responsibility for that decision away from us as a person, in this case, Obama. And to me, that's basically an affront to leadership on two different levels. Number one, you know you're doing the wrong thing. Number two, you don't want to bear personal responsibility for it.
And the other example is, which has been, I guess, unsurprisingly underreported in D.C., is the Iranian deal and the Obama administration lying to Congress about what they were doing with respect to releasing funds to the Iranian regime and trying to get U.S. banks to violate the law, to violate the law in terms of converting currency for the Iranians. The U.S. banks wouldn't do it, but that doesn't obviate the effort by the Obama administration to cover their lie to Congress with trying to get U.S. banks to violate the law.
No, you're absolutely right, Dan. And as you know, I testified in Congress in the House Oversight Committee on this last week. The fact of the matter is, the deeper we go into this, the more just legally and constitutionally disgusting it becomes. When people walked away, when Donald Trump walked away from the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, people made it seem like this huge thing, the turning our back on the law, turning our back on the international system. But it was Julia Freifeld, Secretary of State John Kerry under Obama's Assistant Secretary for Legislative Affairs, who actually sent a note to then-Congressman Mike Pompeo saying, hey, look, not only is this agreement unsigned, but it's not a treaty, it's not an executive agreement, it's just a political agreement, and part of that political, so it's weak. Part of that political agreement, however, was that when it passed Congress, that all these side deals would be given to Congress as a condition of congressional approval. And what we found out is, frankly, the Obama administration lied. And frankly, it's getting more serious because the Obama administration lied during hearings to Congress. And so the House Oversight Committee would be within its right to call some of these officials back, even though they're not out of office, because they lied directly under oath to Congress.
He is Michael Rubin, resident scholar for the American Enterprise Institute, the author of a number of books, including Dancing with the Devil and Kurdistan Rising. Michael, thanks for joining us. Always appreciate your insights.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dan and Amy.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
You want more than just the headlines? Find out what's going on and what it means with me, Dennis Prager, this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Wall Street Journal opining this week that Republicans are in a predictable spot as they head to the midterm election. The party failed to repeal Obamacare, and the press is waving around double-digit premium increases for 2019. One estimate, this is coming from the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, 19% increase on average in Washington State, 24% in New York. Mid-level plans across the board on the exchanges would absorb about a 15% premium increase for 2019. Now, again, this is on in addition to the doubling of premiums that has occurred under Obamacare between 2013 and 2017. So you're on average, the premiums have doubled. Now they're projected to go up by on average 15%. Some other analyses have some markets facing significantly higher premium increases. Blue Cross Blue Shield did an analysis suggesting that consumers in some markets could face 80% rate hikes.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Who wants that?
So this is, as the Wall Street Journal opined, Republicans in a predictable place. What are they to do about it? For more on this topic and others, we're pleased to be joined by Peter Roskam, Republican congressman from Illinois' 6th Congressional District. Peter, thanks for joining us.
Dan and Amy, good to be with you this morning. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. And so what about the state of play with respect to revisiting Obamacare repeal and replace?
So I think it's number one. It's good to remember it's called Obamacare and not GOP care. So Obamacare has done what folks on the right were predicting it would do, and that is pushing people out, making premiums go up, making deductibles go up. And that's where the failure lies. So the rescue effort was not successful. The rescue effort was largely last year where we moved a bill through the House that would have taken on this challenge, but the Senate wasn't able to move it for all their mercurial reasons. And now we are where we are. So in the subcommittee that I chair in the Ways and Means Committee last week, we had a hearing and we're preparing to move forward on legislation on health savings accounts, making these more expansive and more flexible and giving people more control of their dollars and getting them in sync with high deductible plans. So in the short run between now and the fall, that's what I'm going to be advocating for, because I think that is the best move. That said, it's not a complete remedy by any stretch of the imagination. The other thing is, we're pushing hard on a regulatory relief effort as it relates to physicians and hospitals. In other words, going to them and saying, what are the regulations that are coming out of Obamacare that are just crushing you? And we're moving a body of work, working with the administration to change and repeal some of the regulatory red tape that is such a hassle.
Do you think if we ever, you know, remember we liked our doctor and we wanted to keep our doctor, are we going to ever return to those days?
I miss my doctor.
No, a lot of people can't see their physicians, and that's a strong bond that they had because they've been dealing with their illnesses for years and then they were just cut off.
For real, you both know my constituency well, the north and northwest suburbs, and I hear from people all the time, I mean weekly, who have found themselves just whipsawed by this law. And here's the irony. You know, the political left really engaged in a zero-sum game politic here. In other words, during the debate on Obamacare, they created a false impression that there was no cost to this, and that it was all going to be great. You can keep your doctor. Premiums are going to go down. Every family on average is going to save $2,500 per year, and a bunch of nonsense. And what they did was they took away from people and in an effort to give to somebody else. And that is not the politics of invitation, which is why this is such an unsettled thing. If it was such a great law, it would have been well settled and the country would have turned on. But there's a restlessness right now, and you can just feel it. People are really unsatisfied where we are.
Paul Ryan announced this week that the House will take up a couple of immigration bills next week, including the Goodlatte bill, a congressman from Virginia, that would provide a path for legalization for Dreamers, but also end the diversity visa program. Require employers to use E-Verify while establishing a guest worker program. And, of course, we know that President Trump wants border wall funding and ending chain migration as well. Where do you stand on some of those component parts of an immigration bill, and what do you think is going to come out of the House next week?
I don't know what's going to come out of the House. It's a very tumultuous place right now, particularly as it relates to immigration. I go back to the four pillars, basically, that President Trump outlined. And I think my prediction is you're going to have the Goodlatte bill, and then you're going to have a bill that Paul Ryan will put on the floor. And he's been trying to craft and bring people together on it that is something that adheres to the four pillars that the president Trump articulated: border security, dealing with DACA, and so forth, and internal enforcement and the rest. So I'm out of the predicting business as it relates to this.
Wow, President Trump.
Well, one other follow up on that. What are your must haves? I mean, what do you think has to be included for something?
I think the must haves are two things. Number one, you need border security, just without question. It's a non-starter. And then the second thing is you need a pathway. You gotta have these DACA kids get right with the law. I, for years, have been saying take one step at a time on immigration. And the only way to do this is to break it down one step at a time. And folks that think that there's going to be an all or nothing, you know, the Immigration Reform Act of 2018 that's going to fix it all is not going – it's not realistic. We saw that happen with Obamacare, where it was all or nothing, and it was a disaster. I think take one step and then another step and then another step. So in my view, the smart move is border security, link that with DACA, and then take a breath and come back and do other things. But don't try and jam everything.
What's your interpretation of border security? Building a wall, putting more agents along the border? What do you think?
Yeah, I think a wall works in urban areas. I've been down to the Nogales station, and just without question, walls work there. I don't think walls necessarily work out in the middle of the boondocks, and there's other technologies. So it can be either an actual physical barrier, which I think is the smarter move in urban areas, and it can be a virtual wall. But part of this is we've got to change the underlying statute. So right now, if you're in the Border Patrol and you want to pursue somebody, there are now protected lands from an environmental point of view that prohibit you from crossing onto those lands in pursuit of people who are breaking the law. And obviously the lawbreakers couldn't care less about environmental laws. So a lot of this stuff is sort of normalizing and regularizing law enforcement to giving the border folks the tools they need to do the job.
There's some frustration with Republicans, from Republicans, about spending. And that $1.3 trillion omnibus spending bill is a case in point. Then House Republicans moved to do some rescissions to offer some spending cuts, even in the wake of that omnibus spending bill. And you were one Republican who voted against it's H.R. 3, spending cuts to expired and unnecessary programs act. I always love the titles of these acts. But you voted against that, even sort of modest spending cuts in the wake of that omnibus spending bill. Why?
Because it's a gimmick. It's going nowhere in the Senate. This is a negotiated deal. Like you and I talked about a couple weeks ago, the spending drivers are entitlement spending, and this is not going to save any money. And look, on the discretionary side of things, that is the part that Congress actually appropriated. From 2010 to 2018, the real number from discretionary spending from a Republican Congress is down in actual dollars. So this was just too much gimmickry for me, and I didn't want to participate in it.
On the spending side, continuing on that note, there was a resolution that emanated out of your former house, the state house, that essentially rejected Trump's infrastructure plan, sort of, you know, categorically in principle, even though we don't really know what the component parts are at this point. And I think it was and included some Republicans voting for it too, rather incredibly. The point for the resolution opposing it, it seemed to me, was, well, Trump wants to make states pay more of the freight for federal transportation dollars or infrastructure building dollars. Where does that stand, and how do you react to a resolution opposing the state picking up more of the share of bridges and roads and the rest, mass transit that they want to do in their localities?
I think a lot of the things that happen right now in the Illinois General Assembly are just basically sloughed off as not serious. So other states are not waiting around. Other states are engaging. Other states are figuring out how to deploy resources, leveraging them, creating public-private partnerships, and so forth. So, you know, some sort of show vote in the Illinois General Assembly based on a political agenda, I just don't think is very persuasive. And Illinois should be figuring out how to right its ship rather than engaging on things like that right now.
And where does a potential infrastructure plan coming out of either the House or coming from the White House for consideration, where does that stand?
Everybody likes talking about where the money gets spent. Nobody wants to talk about where the money's coming from.
That sounds
about
right.
3 minutes ago, yeah. Right? So you and I are talking about that's discretion. I was talking about discretionary spending. And that's where it comes from. So you either find money within discretionary spending lines and redeploy them, which is possible, or you come up with a new source of revenue. Okay, on the new revenue side, you can tax gasoline, which is ridiculous. You can impose tolls. You can tax carbon, which is ridiculous. You can tax miles, which the folks in the rural areas and some civil libertarians are really creeped out by with the Big Brother element of it. So, again, that gets to everybody likes talking about the spending. Nobody wants to talk about either the revenues or the cuts that have to come as a result of it. So it's all talk right now.
All right. He is Peter Roskam, congressman from Illinois 6th, as you heard, the north-northwest suburbs, hailing from Wheaton. Peter Roskam, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Who's the bigger whore in Chicago this week? Is it Stormy Daniels or Elon Musk? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line.
I should be a headline writer. Who's the biggest whore in Chicago?
Here? Yeah.
Yeah, we have a lot. Yeah, because there's a big announcement.
For the New York Post.
A big reveal today, this afternoon. Mayor Emanuel, little tiny dancer, is teaming up with Elon Musk, who says he's bringing high-speed train service to Chicago. What it is, from Block 37 to O'Hare, you can get there in 12 minutes. 12 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 16-pod. It kind of looks like it's a subway car. 16 people could fit in there.
It looks like something out of a Tron movie or like one of those. What was that Arnold Schwarzenegger movie? with Sharon Stone. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
one of those sort of futuristic type things.
But it's, you know, the PayPal founder has a lot of money on his hands, and he just inserts himself into cities and says he's going to pay for it all. $1 billion, that's what they're going to do. They're going to pay for the whole thing.
Totally privately funded.
Totally.
$1 billion to get to the new global terminal Tiny Dancer has announced as part of an $8.5 billion overhaul of O'Hare, which is not going to be privately funded. And if you think that effectively this gambit would be privately funded, then you haven't been around Chicago for very long now, have you? And if Elon Musk thinks the project's going to cost him $1 billion based on back of the envelope math, then he hasn't done a big construction project in Chicago. No, has he?
The Boring Company, that's what it's called, who Elon Musk.
Yeah, one of his sham companies that's right. just a pass-through for taxpayer subsidies.
Well, they won out the bid. Four other companies were vying for this.
And
for some reason, somehow, Elon Musk got the contract.
I believe there was four bidders. I mean, who doesn't want to get greased by getting a big boondoggle from a kleptocratic government like Chicago? I mean, this is wonderful. This is how Elon Musk has made $20 billion, flim-flamming his way through alternative energy and luxury cars that we subsidize. We subsidize people buying $90,000 cars. I mean, it's remarkable,
that's ended, though, right? But
This guy is Harold Hill incarnate. And again, we've got because of Amy's connections, we were able to get an advanced copy of Elon Musk's presentation today before the assembled Chicago press corps.
Monorail.
I hear those things are awfully loud.
It glides as softly as a cloud.
Is there a chance the track could bend?
Not on your life, my Hindu friend.
What about us Brendan slobs?
You'll be given cushy jobs.
Were you sent here by the devil?
No, good sir, I'm on the level.
The ring came off my pudding can.
Take my penknife, my good man. I swear it's Springfield's only choice. Throw up your hands and raise your voice.
Monorail.
What's it called?
Monorail.
Once again.
Still all cracked and broken.
Sorry, Mom. The mother's spoken.
Mono.
Tweet from Chicago Economist on the topic of who is the bigger whore.
Yes.
Whoer, Elon or Stormy? Elon, for sure. At least Stormy can deliver the thing she promises.
Yeah, because that's a very good tweet. But that's true. This is still an unproven tunneling technology that they're going to use. They're really going to build a tunnel underneath main thoroughfares. It's going to go from downtown Randolph, then to Elston, Halsted, Milwaukee Avenue. What if the roads collapse? We're just letting him play like you, Chicago, like a toy. Go figure this out. Like we're a guinea pig.
Well, a question I would have
is, we need some structural engineers 24/7.
How long do you think Elon Musk's monorail tunnel will look like Lower Wacker?
No, I don't
know. Like, you know.
People live in
a Romville, a tiny Dancerville, tent city.
You can put up little houses.
Well, yeah, you put
it's
up
the tiny houses.
That's a good idea. You put up tiny dancers, tiny little houses to adorn the tracks.
It
literally is like a train set.
I'm claustrophobic, so I'll be dead before I catch myself in one of those little pods. But still, I just don't like that he hasn't completed a project, so we're his first. I don't like that. I mean, he is working on something from L.A. to San Francisco. Well, little pods to the train leaves, ready, Dan? Every 30 seconds.
Well, that's what he's going to do. He's going to say if there's any skepticism, and of course there won't be from the Chicago Press Corps. They'll be totally pliable and compliant as they normally are. But if there is any skepticism, say, oh, I guess this is more of a Los Angeles idea. And just like in The Simpsons, you know, we'll bite.
Different terrain here than they do in L.A.
Bob in Buffalo Grove, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Thanks for taking my call. What a boondoggle and a waste of money. They already have an existing right-of-way. You just board a train at Union Station, And the North Central line goes right by O'Hare, and then you tie that into the CTA structure, and the trains would exit at the CTA terminal underneath O'Hare. All they have to do is work out the logistics of tying in the one rail system to the other. And then the other minor issue, but I think Musk could solve it, is designing a special train that could run on the metro line that's diesel-powered, and then tie it into the electric CTA.
It cost
a tenth of the money. I mean, it's already there.
Thanks for the call, Bob. I mean, it's sort of.
And Bob's an engineer. He's one of our favorite engineers.
You can tell by that call. Tweet from Kevin Rooney: wasn't the Boring Machine? That's the name of Musk company, right?
Right. Boring.
Wasn't the Boring Machine a Stormy Daniels movie? I believe it was.
Oh, we can combine the two here.
This reminds me of the high speed rail we wanted to do at the state level. You know, as part of the Obama's grand vision for Midwest high speed rail, because the problem in Chicago is we can't get to Toledo fast enough.
Or
so
St.
we should spend
Louis.
$10 billion. I mean, it's just
or Detroit.
One freaking boondoggle after another. Ralph and Rantoul.
Good morning. If we really want tunnels built quietly with nobody noticing and apparently without collapsing anything around it, don't we want to go hire El Chapo's guys?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Because apparently they're good at doing all that. And maybe the CIA's got them busy digging under the South China Sea illegal islands to drain that area and you know, we can take that back.
Thanks for the call, Ralph. I like the idea of the El Chapo construction company getting this job because I think it'd be more fun to go from downtown to O'Hare at 100, 150. I don't know. Every time I read a story about this, it gets
faster.
It's like 200, 300, 500 miles an hour, however fast it is. Go on one of those little motorized bikes like he used to escape from prison rather than in one of those trams.
Well, Elon Musk described the ride as, it's so smooth. It's similar to riding Space Mountain. Okay, what happens when it breaks down?
What adult makes a Space Mountain reference? When was the last time you were on Space Mountain? I don't even know how smooth that ride is.
I don't remember. I remember it's dark. It's dark in there.
Tom in Deer Park.
Oh, hi. Good morning. You know, the notion of these drivers.
Tom, you're
following of some people that are pretty bright, and they're coming. They're going to be here, and they're going to be autonomous and private. And I can't remember who said it. It was one of the authors, but it was of his opinion that we should not be building any more public mass transit because of the expense and the fact that the autonomous car is going to replicate and be superior to it. So, you know, you hear that, and then you hear these two dirty birds, Emmanuel and Musk. You know they're up to no good, and I just hope the public revolts against this idea.
Thanks for the call, Tom.
Who's taller? Is Elon Musk, is he a little guy too?
Everybody's taller than Rom, except Peter Dinklage. The other thing that's interesting to know, too, Elon Musk just announced this week, I believe it was this week, 9% of Tesla workforce being laid off globally.
I got a text message saying IBEW 134 is going to make out like champs.
The electricians? What about the what about local 150?
Local.
What about all the trades? All
yeah.
The trades. And I'm not opposed to any of that.
Either. I mean, I'm
not opposed to them making out on a project that's a value add. I am opposed to boondoggles. Why don't we just do like the China model? Why don't we just start building shopping malls that nobody goes to here just to keep people busy? And, basically use as a backdoor conduit to get cash to the connected. James in Westmont.
By the way, Space Mountain, not a smooth ride.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it hasn't been. I give it a week before the homeless start moving in there.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have to hire them to, clean the windows, right? Oh, no, that's not
going to
work.
Right, not at 100 million miles an hour. Thanks for the call, James. Yeah, Space Mountain, not a smooth ride. So Elon Musk needs to upgrade his reference. He is Canadian. What does he know? Canadians. We've had enough of them this week.
Right.
Between Trudeau, now Musk.
I wonder if Musk has a fake eyebrow, too.
That's a good question.
That could fall off during the press conference.
First question.
Are those real? What do you mean? What? No, your eyebrows, dude.
Is everything we see original parts?
Oh, we can ask Stormy Daniels the same question.
I think we know the answer. Will
and
Skokie.
Those are definitely real.
Hey, good morning, guys. Yeah, you know, the thing is, if they really want to get this done and solve the Middle East crisis, they should hire the Palestinians to dig the tunnel. They're pretty good at that stuff.
Yeah, okay.
You know, plus, you know, you got to remember that the deep tunnel project, it's been going on since I was in high school, still not done, and I'm 63 years old. So, you know, it's a nice little hole in the ground into which you pour money that then goes into politicians' purses, you know. It's just the way Chicago is.
Thanks for the call, Will. I mean, here's the thing. You know that bike bypass by my place?
Yeah, the 161, the 616. Oh no, that one.
No.
That's why isn't that open yet?
Because it's not completed. It took less time. This is literally. It took less time to build the Golden Gate Bridge than it has taken to build this bike pass that runs adjacent to Lakeshore Drive down by Navy Pier.
It is needed, but I just thought they needed that one segment and then carry on the path. I've been riding that path for years with my kids. So.
There's another way to do this to not make it needed.
What?
Imprison people who ride bicycles.
Will you stop it?
Yeah, no, that's what I...
No, are you one of those people, road rage people, you don't like the weekend warriors out on their bikes?
No. That all think they're in the Tour de France?
With their superhero spandex on?
Yeah.
Oh, that is annoying.
Yeah. Dudes in body suits on a little bicycle. Some aerodynamic helmet.
It is a bonding thing. It's like you guys playing golf. I don't know. It's weird.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's right. That's what guys do. Is something like play golf. Some bicycle riders. Goodness sakes.
Too soon.
Chris on the Eisenhower.
Bicycle riders and Canadians. This is getting really sad.
Yes.
Hey, Rahm is doing this because Richie Daly and Frank Cruzzi got away with wasting $250 million. On a bat cave,
yes.
Which was supposed to be a CTA stop underneath Block 37. And do you know, as far as I can tell, only two reporters in Chicago have ever reported that. And
Greg Hines is one of them.
Greg Hines and Mike Parker. Mike Parker of CBS, actually in the building above the bat cave, conned one of the guards to let him in with a cameraman, and they got the only known pictures of the bat cave. This was a subway station to nowhere, and certain individuals in the metropolitan region were calling every reporter in Washington and Chicago, trying to get it to be a Democratic equivalent to Don Young's bridge up in Alaska. Mm. No one would, and $250 million, not one of us have ever been moved in terms of public transportation by that bat cave down there. Wasted money. All of Daly's friends made a fortune.
Yeah, but you know how you deal with a boondoggle like that, though, like you're describing the station under Block 37. You respond to that boondoggle with another bigger boondoggle. That's
Amen.
The way you fix it.
We're seeing it. And this guy who cannot make cars at the rate necessary to keep his company afloat. And so he's sacrificing people because he can't figure out how to make his cars. This is the person to whom Tiny Dancer turns for, you know, space-age transit advice. Thank you very much for your wonderful program.
Thanks, Chris.
I come before you good people tonight with an idea. Probably the greatest... Oh, it's not for you. It's more of a Shelbyville idea.
Now, wait just a minute. We're twice as smart as the people of Shelbyville. Just tell us your idea and we'll vote for it.
All right.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So where Pajamas Boy was the poster boy for the Obama administration, we've got a nominee for poster boy for the lobotomized left. He's a congressional candidate in Colorado named Levi Tillman. And here's how he approached arguing for gun control, arguing against
teachers being armed.
Right. Guns in schools and so forth, teachers being armed. This is his suggestion.
In just a few years, he'll be in school, and Donald Trump wants to give his teacher a gun?
She's holding a little boy.
More students have been killed in school shootings in 2018 than U.S. troops in combat operations. We need common sense gun control, but that's not enough. There are 310 million guns in the U.S., and millions of assault-style weapons.
I'm Levi Tillman.
Washington needs more doers and innovators. That's why I'm running for U.S. Congress. I'm calling on Congress to stop talking past each other and try something new. Empower schools and teachers with non-lethal self-defense tools like this can of pepper spray. Pepper spray doesn't cost much, and it can be safely stored in a break glass in case of emergency cabinet. But it's powerful and won't accidentally kill a kid.
And to show how powerful the pepper spray is,
this is a real man.
He pulled a man cow. He waterboarded himself, so to speak.
He pepper sprayed himself.
Trust me, this will stop anyone in their tracks.
My face is burning!
It's incredibly painful, and now I just can't see anything.
He sprays himself again.
Wow.
He keeps trying to wash it off. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
And then he did it.
So
yeah.
Pepper spray is annoying. Yeah,
no,
it's
it hurts.
Disabling.
I've been tear gassed. Honestly, it
I'm
is.
I'm sure you deserved it. That's
no,
not the point.
I did not deserve it.
The point is,
Michigan National Guard pepper sprayed me.
Has a pepper spray in every pot? You want a canister of pepper spray against a gun?
It's a you know what? It was provocative, and it made me watch the ad. That's for sure. But then
sure.
He had his like flash dance moment, and he's got on a white T-shirt where if you wear that, you need a man's ear. And he flipped his head back in the slow motion to the water and the soap. And then he's like, I still can't see. I can't see.
Yeah. Idiocy can be provocative. I agree with you.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
More of Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy comes your way now. And make sure to join me, Larry Elder, tonight at 7. Only on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We're pleased to be joined by our friend Steve Moore, Wall Street Journal columnist, senior economist, or chief economist for CNN. Hey, Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, guys. I'm sorry I missed you yesterday. I was hungover from the Capitals parade in Washington, D.C.
Oh, yes, hockey club.
Did you go?
Well, how many times did the Blackhawks won? What, 3 times in 10 years or something? So
yeah,
it's about time you share the wealth a little
did
bit.
Did you really go to the parade, Steven?
Yeah, it was fun. We had a good time, and it was a beautiful day. And we don't have all these championships like the Cubs and the Blackhawks and the White Sox. And so
all these championships like the Cubs.
I mean, winning gets tiresome.
The Cubs fans are tired of winning. Actually, they're indifferent to winning. Steve, before we get into all things economic, status on your friend Larry Kudlow after his mild heart attack.
Well, I've got really good news. He's out of the hospital, and I expect within a week, maybe two, but I'm going to guess within a week he's back on the job. So, you know, it was a scare. I mean, I almost had a cardiac arrest when I got the call Tuesday night.
Well, where was he and what happened?
You know, I don't know all the details of that. I think he was just feeling severe chest pains, and they rushed him over to Walter Reed Hospital. And the good news, it was a kind of minor heart attack. Now, look, any heart attack is serious, but the other problem that Larry's going to have, and I told him this from the start when he took the job, is look, Donald Trump is a freak of nature, right? That's a guy who works 20 hours a day. I've never seen anyone with the stamina and energy of Donald Trump. And I told him, you're not going to be able to keep up with Donald Trump because nobody can. I remember after, when we worked with him on the campaign, we'd spend 1 or 2 days with him on the campaign trail. And I would be completely exhausted after 48 hours of that. And Trump was doing it day after day after day. So, he's going to have to pace himself, Larry, when he gets back on the job. And, the other thing he's going to have to do, guys, is stop smoking. Larry, if you're listening to the show, stop smoking.
Sure. Well, do you think that Justin Trudeau's eyebrow was the proximate cause of the heart attack?
Well, it was Larry who, here's the interesting thing that didn't really get picked up by many people in the media, which is that at the very end of that G7 meeting, Trump put forward a Larry Kudlow idea, which was, and it threw everybody for a loop. It was basically, why don't we go to zero tariffs? Why don't we all just cut our tariffs to zero? Well, these sanctimonious Europeans almost had a heart attack themselves when Trump said that. Because Trump does have a point. Look, I'm a free trader. You guys know that. And obviously, trade across international borders is positive for both countries. But it is true, and nobody in the media seems to want to report this, that the United States does have lower tariffs than the Europeans, and then certainly than the Japanese and the Canadians. And Trump is basically saying, look, you know, how can you lecture us about our tariffs when your tariffs are higher than ours? And I think he's got a point there. And if Trump can prevail here, you know, I think we're going to see freer trade, not more tariffs.
Well, with respect to that, is Trump posturing when he says no tariffs, no subsidies? Or is he posturing when he advances tariffs and protectionist policies? Or is he posturing in both cases and he's just trying to get to a deal?
Well, that's a good question, Dan. And, you know, the truth is it's always negotiating with Trump, and it is always about the art of the deal. But honestly, I do think that his goal at the end of the day is to get the tariffs down so that, you know, American companies have more access to U.S. markets. And another one, you know, by the way, that because I just thought that in you know, the Europeans and the Canadians were so indignant, you know, at that meeting. But, you know, I'll give you another example where something just doesn't work for us anymore that the Canadians are doing. They're imposing price controls on our pharmaceutical products. So our drugs and vaccines and other, you know, medical products that go over there, they impose price controls on our companies. Now, why does that hurt Americans? Because it means we get stuck, you know, covering all of the cost of developing these drugs. If Americans are wondering why, you know, drug costs are so high in the United States, it's because a lot of these other countries impose these, they don't honor our patents, and then they charge much lower prices. And we can't live with that because, you know, why should Americans who do all the cost of developing these drugs, it costs $2 billion to develop a new drug, you know, then Canadians basically get it for free. And that's true of the Europeans as well. So it's a little example of the kind of thing that goes on. And look, Trump said during the campaign, the rest of the world is laughing behind our back. In a lot of ways, they are. And my favorite line, by the way, of the weekend was when Trump said, we're not going to be the piggy bank of the world anymore. And I think a lot of Americans applauded when he said that.
Why aren't we haggling over that? Was it when you talk about the dairy business in Canada?
Yeah.
Isn't it about $600 million?
It's a big deal. You know, I mean, what Illinois is a dairy state, is it not? I mean, you've got cows there. I mean, I know it's a very agricultural state. I grew up there. That's another example, exactly, Amy, of a very high tariff on American products. By the way, the people who suffer the most from that are the Canadians, right? They have to pay more for milk and butter and you know, other eggs and dairy products. So, you know, if you want free trade, let's have free trade. But a lot of these countries, you know, lecture Trump when he says, well, I'm going to pose a tariff on you, but they have, in a lot of cases, and by the way, the worst actor by far on the world stage is China. I mean, China is become so difficult for American companies to penetrate that market as they sell us more and more stuff. And look, you know, I love going into Walmart and getting everything I did, damn near everything I need for 99 cents. Thank you, China. But at some point, they have to open up their markets to us.
Speaking of trying to lower costs, Sally Pipes writing in Investor's Business Daily about a projected Obamacare premium spikes for 2019 being from 15%, or according to Blue Cross Blue Shield analysis,
well, you know what,
as much as 80% in some markets. And so we talked to Peter Roskam last hour about, you know, what House Republicans have in mind, and he talked about expanding House savings accounts, but you know, are we at this point now where the backdoor takeover of health insurance is complete and this is what it's going to be for the foreseeable future?
No, I don't think so. I think, look, what was the number you said, 15%?
15 to 80.
Yeah, 15 to 80. Because I was going to say 15% increase would be an improvement over Obamacare for the last 5 years, which has been about 30% per year. I mean, it depends on what state you live in. You know, a lot of states have seen a more than doubling of their premiums in the 5 or 6 years we've had Obamacare. So, you know, I ain't saving $2,500 on my health insurance. I don't know about you guys. I think Obamacare is falling apart. I think it is in the death spiral where healthier people are dropping out of the market and sick people are signing up. And that is the definition of an insurance system that crashes. And I believe by the year 2020, which is only a couple years away, we are going to have a major, major debate in this country about what to do about healthcare. Are we going to move towards a free market system, you know, where you can choose your own health plan and you can shop around and you know, if you could do that, I think we could really lower premiums. Or are we going to move towards Bernie Sanders healthcare, you know, where it's all just run by the government? And those are really the two choices, because Obamacare it will not last. Obamacare will have crashed by 2020, in my opinion.
Kim Jong-un.
By the way, we better make the right decision there, right? Because we're talking about almost one-fifth of our economy.
Yeah.
Are we really going to go towards a Venezuela model of healthcare? I mean, really? You know, are we going to move towards a system like we fund our, you know, where we fund our schools? I said this, I think, maybe 100 times on your show, but the two industries in America where prices are completely out of control and quality is suffering is in education and healthcare, the two industries most dominated by government.
Yeah. Wanted to ask you about Kim Jong-un and President Trump, the bond that they forged. Do you think that this is a kind of a PR stunt, or do you think this is genuinely the beginning of a new relationship?
You mean in North Korea? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. You know, I honestly, I mean, I've been thinking a lot about this. I mean, it is true. I was running into one of my liberal friends last night, and, you know, just so you know, I believe in fair play. You know, he's saying, gee, you know, if Barack Obama went over there and negotiated this deal, conservatives would be up in arms. He's giving away the farm and blah, 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 you know, and this is just, you know, this is just you know, a ploy and so on. I just don't really know. I mean, I do think that Trump, and I'm an admirer of Trump, but I think he suffers from the same kind of complex that Obama did, which is they're both very charming people in person, and they believe they can just charm anyone into getting what they want. And that's not the way international diplomacy works. You know, you've got to do the hard work, and just the fact that they got along, right, famously, doesn't necessarily mean that somehow North Korea is going to change its behavior. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm being optimistic, and I think it was brilliant.
Okay. Yeah, the jury's out.
I'd like to be optimistic too, but I just worry that, you know, that the person who charmed the other one in this negotiation was Kim.
You know, I think that's yet to play out. This is why everybody should holster their Nobel nominations. He is Steve Moore, Wall Street Journal columnist, CNN chief economist. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Okay, guys, have a great weekend. Take care.
Take care.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, and nobody likes innovation in the box area, space more than I do.
Why? Because what are they offering you in the pizza department?
No, pizza box. There's been an innovation that we want to take note of. Pizza box for eating pizza in bed. I mean, this is exciting. Yeah, I know this is not a visual medium, so you won't get a full appreciation for it, but listen to the audio, right, associated with sort of the rollout of this new pizza box. I mean, how cutting edge it sounds. You get excited.
It will define a generation.
Yeah, seriously, isn't it?
Wait for it. Tease. The breakthrough we've been waiting for.
You know what's interesting?
A pizza box!
This is the exact same theme music to the Destiny Pictures video that Trump showed Kim Jong-un.
Two men divided.
So that gives you a sense of it.
Bed. Wait.
And here, the pizza box is this.
It pops up.
Yeah, but you can't see it.
But it pops up, so it's like a tray table.
Exactly.
In bed, the cardboard expands out, and it's your kids serving you breakfast in bed. It's just the most brilliant thing.
Right. You're basically putting two legs on a box, right?
It's like putting something else in a box.
It's the greatest innovation with box.
I love box.
Boxes. Since Andy Samberg and Justin Timberlake offered their innovation.
A gift for your special, so take off the towel.
Take a look inside. Is my...
The one thing I would suggest for the pizza box folks is they get a theme song.
Oh,
so
they
go along
should.
With the theme music. Maybe they can get Justin Timberlake to compose something.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Are you going to stay in Chicago long enough to see Elon Musk's underground monorail come online?
Yeah, they said that might be done by 2022.
MSN, their money section, has cataloged the 50 cities America is abandoning. The 50 cities in America people are fleeing. And I said the good news is not all of them are in Illinois.
Okay.
Number 18.
Oh, can we guess?
Yeah, number 18. Illinois cities that people are fleeing. Number 18 on the list?
Peoria.
Correct.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Number 11?
Quincy.
No.
Springfield?
Rockford. Yeah, Rockford.
Oh, I thought that'd be higher. Okay.
Number 4?
Chicago.
No.
Wheaton.
No, obviously. It's like we're going to put a dome over Wheaton.
Oh, Elgin. No, that's growing.
You think of a region.
In Illinois?
Yes. There's a region in Illinois. This is torturous. Yes. Metro East. St. Louis. Metro
East
area.
St. Louis.
Yeah, Metro East is depopulating, as is Southern Illinois generally. And then number one on the list with a bullet.
Chicago
Metro. Chicago, they kind of characterize it regionally. Chicago, Naperville, Elgin corridor.
In just 2 days, three more people on my street are moving. One couple is retiring, can't afford the property taxes. This is besides my neighbor Barbara, who just moved to Wisconsin.
312-642-5600 turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA turnkey.pro text line. What would it take to get you to move to Rockford or Peoria or maybe Metro East so we can repopulate some of the other parts of the state?
Well, there's a town in Vermont that's offering $10,000 for people who work at home just to work from their home to call that place home.
There's a town in Vermont called the State of Vermont because it's a state government grant, $10,000 to recruit workers to move to Vermont.
Oh, and so you could move north, south, east, or west.
Yeah. I would live next to Comrade Bernie and his wife. And I don't know, see if you can find a job. It took Sanders until he was in his early 40s to find one. So it takes some time there. But that $10,000 grant to move to Vermont and work. Would a $10,000 grant keep you here?
312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line. 64636, type in DA.
One of them willing to go as high as 15.
I'd need more than that.
To stay? You're out of here?
Yeah.
What's
2024. 2025. When does Eli graduate? Yeah, 2024. Five.
Wait a second. They're graduating from high school in 2022.
Oh, so that's Peyton. So 2020. No, but I'm here till 2024 some reason.
You're in. So you got 6 years.
Yeah.
All right. Boy, you might just scratching off the days on a calendar in a cell, isn't it? it's interesting, too, because what you get from the kind of the flax for the status quo, including these putative good government organizations, some of them, like Better, like the BGA. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, the BGA, and there's so many like CEOs that don't get it, that don't get the BGA is just a flack for the usual. They have sacred cows, like the fifth floor at City Hall, and they put out this crap, this idiocy. Illinois' population is falling, but the sky isn't. Yeah, we're losing population. Yeah, tax revenue's down. But they find some demographer who says the knee-jerk tax thing doesn't work because you can find high-tax areas that are growing in the U.S. and you can find low-tax areas that are declining. Yeah, I know you can. And they also suggest that the rate that people are moving out is is less substantial than it's being reported. So, thus the sky isn't falling. Let me tell you something. This is the same kind of report they could have issued about the East Germans before the wall fell down there. It's the desire to move. That's the indictment. The pace at which people are actually leaving is prodigious, is substantial. Like when you're the only state other than West Virginia and you have Chicago and the metropolitan area, the only state other than West Virginia to lose population 4 years in a row and leading the nation in out-migration. And in addition to that, half of the population, according to the Paul Simon Institute down at SIU, half of this state's population would like to leave. And the number one reason they cite is taxes. It's not just high state income taxes. It's the overall tax burden. They cherry pick. Minnesota has a higher state income tax. Not a higher overall state and local tax burden, because Illinois is number one with a bullet in the country. And obviously property taxes, it's not just your monthly nut that driven by property taxes. It's how it destroys home value. So it's one thing to say I pay 10 grand on a $200,000 house in Illinois, and so, you know, that factors into almost $1,000 a month in property taxes. $800 a month in property taxes. That's only half of it. When you go to sell your home and you take a $50,000 or $75,000 hit because it has no market value because of the property taxes, how do you factor that into the overall state and local tax burden, you morons, you hacks at BGA? Lying to you. It's not just the politicians. It's these phony baloney organizations that front for them. Phil in Deerfield, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. Amy, this is not a shot because I get it about your kids. But why stay because of the schools? I mean, your kids can go to schools in another state. I hear that from people all the time. I'm saying to my kids graduate. I don't understand.
Well, I have a parenting agreement where I can't move out of the state of Illinois.
She's got a bracelet on that tracks her.
Okay, no, that's fine.
I have a probation
officer. I actually find that's really unfair to you.
Oh, it's unfair to my kids.
Right, it is. That's great. I just wanted to ask the question.
It's a lot of people. And a lot of people have their own reasons and their own, you know.
Well, I mean, part of it is, too, you don't want to be disruptive to the kids. They have friends, they have sports, they have activities that they're here, and, you know, it's a finite period of time, so let them, you know, play out the string through grade school or high school, whatever. There's
a
clean break.
I can't even move to the suburb zone. That's what really bothers me, because I know that they'd be much better. Well, I shouldn't say that. Well, you know what I'm saying without saying it, because I don't want to.
But I mean, in terms of why people say I'm staying till the kids are out of this level of schooling or this level, I mean, that's understandable because you're thinking about your kids' best interests and their desire to be in a place that they're comfortable and doing well and participating in a lot of activities and having friends and not wanting to start over for a couple of years. You know, you take a hit for a couple of more years before you get out. You do it for your kids. I get that. Now, here's the other thing, too. Cranes. This is the business magazine, the anti-business magazine in Chicago, you know. They report some good news about Chicago, and this is good news, but it's limited. The number of Chicago households that have more than $100,000 in annual income and headed by a person under the age of 45 grew by 26,000 between the year 2010 and 2016, outpacing cities with kind of younger higher income families in places like Denver, Houston, San Francisco. So that's good. But here's what's happening. And this is bad because it's not sustainable. This goes back to this whole idea. Oh, look at River North. Look at the Gold Coast. Look at Lincoln Park. Look at Old Town. A couple other neighborhoods near South Loop and all that. You say, look at how beautiful this is. And you have all these upwardly mobile professionals. True. It's all true. But if you think a city of 3 million people can burn down around a couple of hundred thousand people, and this is all going to be okay because you have a couple hundred thousand people that are paying the freight, generally speaking, and are making the money, and you have people doing very well that are somewhat insulated from terrible public policy, and people that are the beneficiaries of transfer payments, so they're insulated from terrible public policy, and then everybody in the middle gets squeezed out of here. If you think that is a robust growth model, a model for a stable community, then you're out of your mind. And you're seeing it play out in real time. So you don't even have to believe my argument. All you have to do is just pick your head up and look around. Russ in Barrington, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, Dan and Amy. Good morning to you.
Morning.
You know, I've been listening to the show for a while, and you guys talked me into it. It's kind of sad. My dad raised six kids on the south side of Chicago in Evergreen Park in a little three-aisle grocery store. But I sold my house in Illinois. I'm closing tomorrow, getting an apartment for a year, and moving to Florida.
Is that right?
Really kind of sad. Yep.
And how long were you in Barrington?
5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Took a $75,000 hit on my home, but
there you go.
I'm out of here.
Right. Was there anything else that was kind of keeping you here? Family, job, or anything else?
Well, family and job I have here, but the family's actually all starting. My brother just bought a house in Florida, five doors down from us. So,
oh, there you go.
We kind of planted a flag, and we're trying to get as many people down there as we can.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Russ. Sorry to lose you, but I understand it. Appreciate it. And
you can still listen from Florida on the AM560 mobile app.
Very
download
nice.
It today.
Nice plug.
Thank you.
Well done. Seamless. But here's the $75,000 on his house. How do you factor that into the taxes you pay here? 75 grand hit. Dan in Wilmette.
30 years ago, the top employers in Illinois were all private companies. You know, Caterpillar, Allstate, State Farm, things like that.
Yep.
Now the top five employers in the state of Illinois are the City of Chicago, County of Cook, MWRD,
State of Illinois.
State of Illinois and the federal employees.
Mm-hmm.
God knows where those people are. I don't see any of them. But nonetheless, that's what's killed Illinois. Done.
Thanks for the call, Dan. I mean, that's right.
And I think if you collect an Illinois pension, you know, these fat pensions, you should be living in the state of Illinois. Don't be getting a second house in Ireland, Mike Madigan, or, you know, Dick Mell, who's got a huge, you know, place in, like, a palace in Florida. You have to stay here.
Well, that's why, like, when Harvey...
You think he lives in the ward that he represented?
Yeah, he lives in a little bungalow near Midway.
Yeah.
That's why...
Dick Mell. I know Mike Madigan lives in that bungalow.
When Harvey laid off half its police force and firefighters, we looked at where retired Harvey firefighters live. Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
Texas. Tennessee, Florida, just like anybody else.
Yeah, they got out of Illinois, but they're still sucking off of our tax dollars.
I mean, I'd say, look, this is the pension. This is the pension they earn,
yeah.
And that was promised under the terms that they. So I get it, but when you see somebody from Harvey, retired in his early 50s, buying a $400,000 house in Scottsdale. Where you've got 30% unemployment in Harvey and the median home price in Harvey is basically zero. And they're financing, you know, these guys to go have nice retirements in nicer places. There's something fundamentally unfair, not right about that. And that's a conversation we have to have. Or not. Or you just leave. Jeff and Berwyn, like you in 2024.
Greetings. A year or so ago, maybe a little longer, the Tribune had a story about in 2015 alone, 3,000 millionaires moved out of the city of Chicago.
Yeah, right.
And I maintain that millionaires, unless they have an inherited, are not stupid people. And they see the handwriting on the wall. So they're getting out of Dodge while the getting's good, getting the best value for their home. There's a train wreck coming with property taxes, as you've all spoken about very often. And my question is, why is it not the grassroots movement started to amend the Illinois Constitution about this, you cannot cut back on public employee benefits? Why is there not a movement? Is it going to take a lot of pain and blood in the streets to get it going? Or I don't understand that.
Unfortunately, I think that's the case, Jeff. Thanks for the call. Unfortunately, you know, I would have thought the revolt would have come a long time ago. The good news is that 46% of likely general election voters in 2018 think that revolution is required to improve conditions in Illinois and not simple reforms. So nearly a majority does, a significant plurality by a 15-point spread, revolution versus simple reforms. That's the good news. The bad news is the leadership of both political parties are not interested in revolution. So until people are willing to change out the leadership of both political parties, then the revolution is going to be people leaving, not people staying and reordering the power structure in the state, I'm sorry to say. Sean in Elmwood Park.
You know, when a guy says his whole family's moving to Florida, you could mention my company, Jerky. Secondly, that Crane's article, why? Let's trace the origins back to where those people are getting paid. Guaranteed, it goes back to tax money. And that's what you got to learn to respect. Respect the scam. So you're going to spend 2 hours in that dirty car driving down to Bolingbrook. Why don't you look around at the 19 pieces of heavy equipment and the six mopes meandering around to the same companies that get the contracts all over the roads? It's great if you're in on this scam. And I don't mean if you're, Elon Musk, with that William Shatner toupees walking around under, pretending he's on the cutting edge of space technology, never producing a dollar outside of PayPal. He is the greatest scam artist. He may end up president one day. I love it, because the people of Chicago keep pretending it's progress. And you cannot point to a company that has come to Illinois that hasn't either been paid to do so or promised not to be taxed like the rest of us. It is the greatest scam in the country, and they're going to stay in power. And you ain't seen nothing yet until you see J.B. Pritzker take over. Woo, doggy. Then it's really going to get fun.
Thanks, Sean.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Still getting reactions and reviews pouring in over that Destiny Pictures production that was presented to Kim Jong-un.
Oh,
so that he could see what North Korea could be in partnership with America. A little flavor.
7 billion people inhabit planet Earth. Of those alive today, only a small number will leave a lasting impact. And only the very few will make decisions or take actions that renew their homeland and change the course of history.
Now just wait a second. Now listen to that pizza box video again. And I just want to see a compare and contrast. This is the innovative pizza box. This guy's probably going to make $100 million. Domino's going to buy it. He just put two legs on a pizza box so you can eat it pizza
right,
in
let's
bed.
Hear it, right.
Listen. It's the same.
Same key of G. No, I'm not kidding you. With an F minor there in there. In a world gone mad.
They should have
two leaders, one choice.
They should have shown somebody eating in bed and says, "Show to Kim Jong-un, this could be you. I'll give you all of the pizza boxes with the legs that this country has. We'll mass produce them, and then you never have to leave the bed. You can just eat pizza in bed all day. How about that for a future?" I mean, it really is. It's the same. I wonder if the pizza box guys know about this.
I wonder. Well, the video goes on. I mean, it's kind of a, you know, Kim Jong-un, this is what your life could be like. You can have all
pizza in bed.
And all the amenities that Americans have.
A story about a special moment in time when a man is presented with one chance that may never be repeated. What will he choose? To show vision and leadership? Or not?
It's really... I want to hear more. Can I hear more?
That copy, to show, to will he choose vision and leadership to show vision or not?
And then it goes to a black and white picture of like a desolate area.
It's sort of anticlimactic. It doesn't really the crescendo, rhetorical crescendo you want for a movie trailer.
Give me another shot.
And there comes a time when only a few are called upon to make a difference. But the question is, what difference will the few make? The past doesn't have to be the future.
Parallel structure.
Out of the darkness can come the light. And the light of hope can burn bright.
Cliche.
Yeah, but that's, you know, they should have hired, to the audience.
They should have hired Andrew Ross Sorkin to write that. But I want to go back to thinking about pizza. Say that.
$7 billion.
It's the same thing. I'm not kidding you.
Somebody's ripping off somebody here. Now, Scott Adams, the Dilbert cartoon creator, who is also the Trump whisperer, he suggested that, and I'm not sure if he was talking about the pizza box video or the propaganda video that Trump showed Kim Jong-un. It was a game changer.
Let me give you my first reaction. I just watched it. It's fresh in my mind. It might be the best thing that anybody ever did in a negotiation. Period. It might be in the history of the world.
The history of the world.
The best thing anybody ever did. It is so good. It hits every note perfectly.
It was the, if you've seen the video or now you get a little flavor for it, do you think that showing Kim Jong-un what North Korea could be was the greatest negotiation tactic in the history of the world? Or is Scott Adams listening to Donald Trump's rhetoric a little bit too much and internalizing it? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro, text line. I would have taken another tack.
What would you
have would have taken, you know, I think you have to put the fear into Kim Jong-un. I don't think you can persuade him with, you know, a positive future, what things could be. He just wants to stay in charge and continue to throw people in gulags who don't properly show fealty to him. And so he doesn't care about hotels and real estate developments on the beach. And he just cares about power, so you have to scare him. I would have gone with something more frightening for his personal future.
Which is what?
I would have said, Kim Jong-un, you don't want to end up like your dad. You remember dear old Pops, dear leader dad, and how it went, how he went out?
Wish you won't me.
Why aren't more people intelligent like me? I'm so lonely, so lonely, so lonely inside, real alone. There's no one, just me only, sitting on my little throne. Work very hard and make up great friends, but nobody listens, no one understands. Seems like no one takes me seriously, and so I'm lonely.
No.
A bit of lonely.
Kim Jong-un, you don't want to end up like that with no friends, right? Don't you think that would have been more powerful?
Yes, I do.
Oh, that's a hate crime, what you just did. Matt Stone and Trey Parker. Matt Stone and Trey Parker can get away with it. You cannot.
I know. I'm just trying to have fun, express myself through characterizations of others.
That's right.
Don't you understand, young man?
Craig in Mount Greenwood.
Yeah, Dan, you know, a lot of folks aren't understanding Trump's negotiation style. I got a pretty good feel for what he's doing and everything. It's actually, it is brilliant because what he's doing, he's putting a couple of objects there in front of Kim Jong-un. Now, the first thing is he shows what one choice is, you know, that he's got all those warships sitting out there. He showed them by what he's done with some other incidents that occurred where he'll take action. He'll send the missiles in, the Tomahawks and all that. He knows he's okay. But then now with the talk, he's just talking real friendly, real nice, all thing. He's showing them what it could be, you know. And the thing is, you remember what happened with Obama? He basically sent over cargo planes of cash, giving away all kinds of things, lifting sanctions on all these different places. Trump hasn't done any of it. It's all just sweet talk. Now, the sweet talk is what Kim Jong-un, he can see that, hey, I can get along with this guy. We can get along with him. The other choice is he's going to have some hurt on him, and he knows it. And Trump is communicating it perfectly because he's showing him both choices.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for the call, Craig. Mike in Crown Point.
Good morning, guys. I think
there's no need to put fear into Kim Jong-un. He was afraid to leave his own country in fear there'd be a military coup when he left. He's got plenty of stick. What he needed was carrot, and I think one of the appeals of that carrot was he can take a lot of credit for it. As this country grows and develops and prospers, he'll be the guy that can take full credit.
Thanks for the call, Mike. You think Trump should follow up with like a gilded personal toilet for Kim Jong-un? It's like a courtesy of Trump. Something garish that would fit into like Trump's
24 karat gold toilet.
Yeah. For the little guy.
And the portable thing with, you know.
Because he's jumpy about where he
pops the spot. Yeah. Well, he brought his own toilet. And this story got buried, probably because it's so disgusting to talk about. But
could be.
Kim Jong-un brought his own portable toilet because he was afraid and fearful that his excrements would be somehow stolen and tested. And then we'd hear about the health of Kim Jong-un. So he's hiding something.
He was afraid that Elon Musk was going to build a tunnel to the toilet at his hotel room
in Singapore. That proves that he's unstable right there, that he actually thinks, you think the level of paranoia there is unmatched, unparalleled to anything you've ever seen. Who's that? What? I've never even heard of people doing that. It had to be a portable potty.
Congratulations, Team America. You have stopped nothing.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy were talking about video that Trump presented to Kim Jong-un, which Scott Adams called the greatest negotiation tactic in the history of the world.
And it was by Destiny Productions.
Yeah, Destiny Pictures.
Pictures, which sounds like something about Stormy Daniels.
That's the new name of the Weinstein Company.
Hey!
Ambie Davis's Bowling Ball tweeted, I've already scripted my own positive future trailer for my upcoming performance review. I think everybody's going to be doing it. Jake in Lake Geneva, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I love your show, so thank you for having me on.
Thank you.
I think this was already, this whole summit and what's going on now has been scripted. Personally, I believe that this was done several weeks ago and put into motion. There was a little balk there that I believe basically what they're doing is they're letting Kim Jong-un save face right now. So he looks like a hero to his people because he faced the ultimatum. It was either get on board and go along with this, or China was probably going to colonize North Korea and take him out of power. And I think that the economic machinery between the United States and China, the necessity for each other's dollars, the global politics of it is that North Korea was just going to be an anchor that kept pulling everybody down. So they negotiated this in advance. China got on board that they were either going to eliminate the problem for us and eliminate their own problem, or they were going to let him, save face and get on board with this.
Well, it's an interesting theory. Thanks for the call, Jake. It's possible. And what North Korea does what China does in the next year or so with respect to some of the other issues we have with China, trade routes that run through the South China Sea, the issue of Taiwan independence, the issue of their cyber attacks and intellectual property theft, along with trade policy, I guess will bear out whether or not that theory is correct. But it's an interesting thought. It's a hopeful thought. I hope that's correct. Now, just to close the show, I mean, one of the things that you know about us is that we pride ourselves on making sure that we capture the best rants in the culture, including
sports. Yeah, because you're not the only one who goes on rants.
No, that's hardly. No.
Oh, no.
And I'm not even the best at it, as much as I try. We've got some classics, and we'll get to those. But there was new audio. You don't get this very much. New audio of
of an old rant?
Well, yeah, it's from 2016. It's when the former Mets manager, Terry Collins, was thrown out of a Dodgers-Mets game by Tom Hallion. And, you don't get this audio very much. And it's so much fun when a manager or a coach or even a player gets thrown out of a game. You kind of want to hear what's being said. Well, you get a little flavor for it right here.
Come on. Talk to me. Talk to me.
Tommy, that's
Then you talk to me about it.
I know, but you look.
Okay.
You got to give us a shot.
You know what?
You got to give us a shot.
Okay, listen to me. Let me hear what I'm saying, okay? You get your shot. You had your shot right there in the situation.
Well, why not?
You know the situation, Terry.
Why don't you get a shot, Donnie?
Because that makes it worse. Terry, that makes it f***ing worse.
I know it. But MLB did nothing to that guy. Nothing.
Okay, that I can't control. Terry, I can't control that. You know as well as I do. You know where I stand on the whole f***ing situation.
And if it would have been a La Russa, he would have thrown third base at him. Now, that still doesn't compare to the great Lee Elia.
You're admired now, and you're in a little difficulty. We've got all these so-called f***ing fans that come out here and say they're Cub fans that are supposed to be behind you, ripping every f***ing thing you do. I'll tell you one f***ing thing. I hope we get f***ing hotter than f***. Just to scuff it up, them 3,000 people that show up every day.
So disrespectful. I love it.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.